Hi, we're going to pick up a we're going to do a few themes today associated with Purim and the Megillah. In the previous year, we had six unique, distinct themes. We'll have a few others today. You know, the question that's asked is, why is it that we don't say anything in what's called Bracha Achas Mein Shalosh, the Ala Michya, Ala Geffen? There's no mention when it comes to Purim and Hanukkah. As opposed to what? As opposed to benching where there is. As opposed to the Amidah where there is. But yet, if it's a holiday, Shalosh Regalim, Rosh Hashanah, there is in Bracha Achas Mein Shalosh. There is a, you have it. See, the idea is this. Where you have a day which is a unique, distinct day, and we spoke about Kedushas Hayom versus Kviyas Hayom, where there's a Kedushas Hayom, it's a different day, as reflected by a Korban Musaf, as reflected by an Isser Malacha. So you put in a Yala V'Yavo, you put in a Ritzei, to reflect the quality of the day. Baruch Hashem Yom Yom, we acknowledge God, not in a generic sense, we acknowledge God specifically, relating to the uniqueness of the day. The quality, the character of the day is different, and therefore it demands a Yaleh V'Yavo, or a Ritzeh, in the benching. It demands a different davening, a different Amidah, as you have a different Amidah on Shabbos, a different Amidah on Yom Tov. Okay? However, Purim and Chanukah are weekdays. Now, it's a day of Halal V'Hodah. It's a day where what? We express gratitude. Okay? Al-Hanisim. There's the Al-Hanisim. There's, we don't just express the regular gratitude, but we express gratitude for the salvation, in the case of Purim, of the Jewish people saved from genocide. In the case of Hanukkah, the salvation of the Jewish religion. It's not just the regular Modim Anachnu Lach, but there's a Tosefes, there's an additional expression of gratitude, the Al-Hanisim, okay? That you have. That doesn't change the character of the day. That's something that's instituted on that day, but it qualitatively doesn't change the character of the day. What is Bracha Achas Mein Shalosh, which is known as Ala Michya? It's a shortened, you know what I mean? It's the benching turned from three brachos, Doraisa, into one. So if there's a unique character of the day, like on a Yom Tov or a Shabbos or a Rosh Chodesh, where there's a special Korban Musaf, so we have to reflect that. We have to reflect the unique character of the day. Baruch Hashem Yom Yom. Because as we've said in other places, benching is a type of avoda. But there's not a unique, distinct character to Purim or Hanukkah. It's a day, a weekday, it's a Yom Chol that has mitzvos attached. There are certain things that we do on that Yom Chol. It's not a Yom Kadosh. It doesn't have Kedushas Hayom, it has Kviyas Hayom. Because of that, so once you're shortening the benching from three sections to one, you're not going to reflect that. There's going to be a nodelecha, but it's not going to reflect the specific character of Purim or Hanukkah because it's not a unique, distinct day. Okay? That's just one point. Another issue is this. The famous issue that the Gemara asks about Esther. You know, we know that there are five categories of when a Jew has to give up their life. The principle in Judaism is v'chai b'hem. Normally we live, v'chai b'hem, you live through the mitzvahs, v'lo sheyamus b'hem. So if someone is sick, you violate Shabbos, you eat on Yom Kippur. But there are three particular mitzvahs, avodah zarah, idolatry, paganism, shvichas damim, which is murder, and gilui arayos, which are the inappropriate sexual relationships, the incestuous, the adulterous relationships. So the way the Ramban learns and others learn, those are three very, very severe sins, three cardinal sins. The Chomer HaIsser, the Chomer HaAveira, okay? You can never violate them. Those principles. Now others, the Baal HaMor, the Meiri, say that they have a common denominator that's associated with categories 4 and 5. So there's a Avodah Zarah, Shvichus Damim, Gilui Arayos. What's category 4? Bifarhesya. Can't have a Chilul Hashem. You can't desecrate God's name. Normally, if someone puts a gun to your head and says, you know, cut your payos off, you cut them off. If they put a gun to your head and says, cut your payos off in front of 10 Jews, no, that's bifarhesya. You're not allowed to be mechal. V'nikdashti besoch b'nei Yisrael. There has to be Kiddush Hashem when it's betoch b'nei Yisrael. So what? That, and then the category number 5 is b'shas hashmad, at a time when there's a decree against, it's not an individual, it's the government has a decree to defy the Jewish religion. So we defy what? We don't. The Jewish religion is not broken. We stand in defiance to say that that value, the value of God and God's Torah that He gave us, is a greater value, even if it means our life. That's Shas HaShmad. The Me'iri and Balamor see one common denominator throughout all five. They're all a function of Kiddush Hashem. And in the past, we've explained where is the Kiddush Hashem with Avodah Zarah is obvious. Where's the Kiddush Hashem, God's greatest creation? Well, you don't murder God's greatest handiwork, nor do you defile God's greatest handiwork. You know, a sexual violation is called a pagam. It's, you know, be pogam. So there's a Kiddush Hashem aspect in all five, one common denominator. Not all Rishonim agree. The Ramban, others say no. There's three, that it's severity of the sin, Chomer Yisr, and then there's the Kiddush Hashem component in Farhesia and in Shas HaShmad. So what's the question? What does it have to do with Purim and the Megillah? What it has to do is the following, okay? The following principle. How could Esther, who was a married woman, she was married to Mordechai, how could she have had relations with Ahasuerus? That's the question. Gemara says, Esther b'Farhesia have. Hey, you know, the world, the public knew, everybody knew that she's, there's more than 10 that knew that she's sleeping with the king. How could that happen? It's interesting. The Gemara didn't ask Esther Gilui Arayos. Why didn't the Gemara ask Esther Gilui Arayos? Because Esther's passive. So, Yehareg ve'al yavor. Better you should be killed than you should violate. It doesn't say tehareg ve'al ta'avor. Why? Because a woman, when it comes to the sexual, if she's not the catalyst in the nature of the act, she's the one who's passive. So what? So Esther karka olam. I'm sorry, a woman is karka olam. She's passive. It's being done to her. She's not doing it to a man. It's being done to her. Okay? That's not a violation of Gilui Arayos when you're passive. You can't actively kill someone. If someone takes you and they tie you up and they throw you out the window, and because of the force of gravity, the physics on your weight goes down two stories and you crush the baby who's below, you don't have to kill yourself for that. You're not jumping on the baby. You're an object. You're a passive object who's being thrown on the baby. That's not, you know, in a case like that, you don't give up your life. It's you give up your life rather than actively violating the sin. So what's the point? Normally a woman is passive. All is well. Ahasuerus, as well as most other men, what they're doing is hanas atzma. Not doing it to get you to violate the Torah. He's got a certain instinctual need. He's got a certain physical need. And he's using you to fulfill his physical need. So the Gemara doesn't ask that, because those are the answers you could give. Karka olam, the Gemara says, hanas atzma, on a standard case. What was the question about Esther? She had the right to be passive. The problem was, is that true if the whole world knows about it? Is that true if it's b'farhesia? So it's not Gilui Arayos. It's not category three, because you're passive or because he's doing it for his own benefit. Is it a problem of farhesia, though? Because bottom line is, whether you're passive or whether you're active, the whole world knows what? That you're having, you know, that you're sleeping with another man? That's what the Gemara asked. In the case is what? That where she's passive, okay, or where he's doing it for his own benefit, as long as she's not actively violating it, that too, she's not obligated to give up her life. She's not obligated to give up her life. Okay? Now here's the issue. Okay? As long as she's passive, he demands it of her, he takes her, she's passive, he's doing it for his own benefit. What about when she, and there's a shir, it's called Esther the Psychologist, when she is the active one, i.e., when she goes, risks her life, willing to commit suicide, because you can't wait 11 months for waiting for him to be in a good mood and her finding favor in his eyes. What's happening on the street right now, they're not waiting 11 months. Look at what they're doing to Jewish stores. Look at how they're abducting Jewish women, how they're beating Jewish men on the street. Mordechai forces her. You've got to act, and you've got to act now. You can't wait till next Adar when the genocide decree is going to be fulfilled. It's taking place now. People are taking the law into their own hands. And the police are not stopping them. They're not going to stop their fellow Persian, their cousin. They're not going to defend the Jew when the Jew's going to be dead anyways in a few months. So what happens? she risks her life. He's paranoid. He's got a right to be paranoid because there's been assassination attempts on him. And she goes into the inner chambers. So she says something to Mordechai. She asks everyone to fast and do tshuva. Haman is not the cause. Haman is a symptom. If we don't change and there's not a transformation in the Jewish people, it doesn't matter if you have a Jew in the royal court or not. It's not going to help if the Jews haven't changed. So that year, there's no Seder. They fast over Pesach. And she goes in. She says, Ka'asher avadati avadati. And we say that to the trup of what? Ka'asher avadati avadati. We say it to the trup of Eicha. What's going on there? What's avadati avadati? If he does not extend the Sharvita Zahav, the golden scepter, I'm dead. I'm committing suicide. And if he does, I'm lost to you. The one man that I've ever known, that I've ever loved, the one that I really care about. See, because until now it wasn't adultery. She can go back to Mordechai. She was passive. She doesn't have to give up her life. She's not in violation. But when she asks Ahasuerus for this wine fest, for this special meal, this festive evening, a festive evening means what? Not just an intimate dinner of wining and dining. It means what happens afterwards when they go upstairs after the wining and dining are over. There she's not passive. She was the catalyst. She's the one who's generating that intercourse. She's the one who's generating that rendezvous. So at that point, she can never resume her relationship, as we know from the Gemara in Sota. Echad labaal, echad laboel. Once there's been a violation of fidelity, where a person actively violates the fidelity, not only are they prohibited to the adulterer, they're prohibited to their husband because of that violation. The act of me'ilah. That being the case, okay? What we learn here, the principle we learn is, for the sake of Hatzalas Klal Yisrael, for the sake of saving the nation, she had the right to risk suicide. She had the right, even though it was a capital offense to go into the king, to attempt to save the nation, she had the right to risk suicide. And she had the right to do what? Because she thought, and we've said this in the Shir on Esther the Psychologist, why she did this particular plan of the two feasts, of two's company, three's a crowd, the whole thing. She had a right to do what? To engage in this relationship with another man other than her husband for the sake of Hatzalas Klal Yisrael. Now, a me'ila it was, a violation of her husband it was. So for that, that's kasher avadati avadati. She can never go back. The Maharik says that she can never go back to living with Mordechai. Never can resume. That's part of the tragedy. She sacrificed the one love that she had in her life. But she has the right to do it. That's the chiddush. She has the right to do it. Both the violation of the capital offense and the violation here of fidelity to save the Jewish people. That's a chiddush. People ask, well, why didn't Mordechai just give her a get? You know, if she's divorced, then it's not a violation. By her actively, you know, asking for the wine fest, the intimate evening, which will lead to going upstairs afterwards, why didn't she just get Mordechai divorce her? Then she could resume. They could, at some point in time, resume their relationship as husband and wife. So the answer is because, by definition, a get is a public activity. You have to have witnesses. They didn't want word getting out. They didn't want to be done. And even if a get wouldn't be found out, if he has to remarry her, that is a public activity. It's too much of a risk for her life if word gets out. You know, they mean that she's having that she was married to another man or that she's marrying another man. So for that reason, that was the Mefarshim say that's not an option. The principle we mentioned, it alluded to it, I just want to spell it out. There's a principle of Horosha, Vayavor Mordechai. So the Vayavor from the word over is what? They violated Pesach. The Gaon and others say that they actually did not observe Seder that night. Other Mefarshim say no, they fasted 3 days, you know, 3 days, and then at night they would sit down and have matzah and maror. They were in the Gullus, so there were two Sedarim, right? There was the night of the 15th and the night of the 16th. They had Seder both nights. So whether they did have Seder or not have Seder, it was very clear, though, the day itself was Sak ve'efer yutzal rabim, that they were wearing sackcloth and ashes. And what gives him the right to do that? That's a famous principle of Horasha. The Chachmei Hador, if the Migdar Milsa, I'll give you an example, Eliyahu at Har HaKarmel. What gave him the right to offer a korban outside the Beis HaMikdash? To prevent the nation from going down the path of worship of the Baal and to show the corruption of the Baal, a one-time event like that, he has a right to do it. That was the whole issue that Shimon ben Shetach, he executed prostitutes in Ashkelon. They didn't commit a capital offense. They weren't committing adultery. They weren't married. But what? Because the people, in order to Migdar Milsa, he can do a Hara Shah because of what was happening to the people in terms of their whole sexual proprieties. Or likewise, there was someone who was executed for riding horseback on Shabbos. It's a violation of a din derabbanan. No, but the public brazen defiance, even though it was a rabbinic defiance, because it was undermining the whole sanctity of the Shabbos, they executed the person. So this here, by Mordechai, was a hora shah, that we violate the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov. For what? For the sake of what? The Jewish people not being annihilated. For the sake that of the genocide decree not being perpetrated. When we say Al HaNisim, do we say Bazman HaZeh or do we add a Vav, the conjunction Uvizman HaZeh? So many of the Achronim say you should say Uvizman HaZeh. What's the idea? Just like the Al HaNisim, you have a Vav. It's a continuation of the gratitude that we express to God, not just the general gratitude, but the specific gratitude of this date in history. Uvizman HaZeh is what? It's not just gratitude for what was done at that moment in history, that great historical moment that saved the genocide, but we also express God for the miracles he does today as well. Uvizman HaZeh. And likewise, you have the idea of the phrase purkan. In Al HaNisim, the Rav mentioned this. Every word in that paragraph is Hebrew, except for the word purkan. What would have been the Hebrew word? Not pe resh kuf, which is Aramaic, would have been gimel aleph lamed, geula. How come it's not geula? Because geula is something which is a complete geula. I'm talking about like complete geula, and that's only done by a Kodesh Baruch Hu. The purkan here of Mordechai and Esther, when it's something done by the human beings, human hands and human auspices, it's great, it's wonderful, but it's limited because by definition, the capability of humans is limited. A complete redemption, which this was not. We spoke about the other shir, Akate Avde Achashverosh Hanan. It was a great moment in Jewish history, the greatest tshuva movement we ever had, but it was not a complete redemption. That can only be done through the Almighty, you know, through divine auspices. And therefore we reflect that by not using the word geula in Al HaNisim, we use the word purkan. To be porek ol. In other words, we took off the yoke around our neck of Haman and Achashverosh. But we didn't totally go through a total redemption. One last point on Daf Hey Amud Beis. You have a discussion, is Rav and Ravasi, is the halacha of having a minyan, it has to be read b'tzibur. The Megillah has to be read b'tzibur. That for sure, l'chadchila, everyone agrees to. Is it ma'akev or not? According to the opinion in the debate between Rav and Ravasi, that a minyan is ma'akev, what's the point? The point is the purpose of the mitzvah, the kiyum ha-mitzvah, is pirsum ha-nisa. So you could have pirsum ha-nes to an individual. The opinion that says it's not ma'akev, there is pirsum ha-nes to an individual. But the question is this. The real pirsum ha-nes is to be v'nikdashti betoch b'nei Yisrael, to publicize and to declare God's providential hand, that the Kiddush Hashem is betoch b'nei Yisrael. So since that's the purpose of Megillas Esther, is to publicize the events of what happened in Shushan in the Persian Empire, how God behind the scenes brought about the salvation of the Jewish people through the machination of the geopolitic of the Persian Empire. To publicize that, which is what the mitzvah of Kriyas and Megillah, the Maisa mitzvah is reading the Megillah, the Kiyuma mitzvah is a Pirsum HaNes. Is the definition of Pirsum HaNes by definition has to be V'nikdashti B'toch B'nei Yisrael? Does it have to be done B'tzibur or even B'yachid? What's the inherent definition? That's that machlokas as to whether a minyan is ma'akev for Kriyas HaMegillah or not. One last point. We're not going to develop this here, but a point, you know, there's a debate between the Bahag and other Rishonim in terms of women vis-a-vis the reading of the Megillah. There's a phrase, mishpacha u'mishpacha, right? That it's, what does that mean, mishpacha u'mishpacha in the Megillah? Many understand, it's a Yerushalmi and others, that the head of the family has to make sure that every member of the family hears the Megillah being read. If the whole purpose is that the wives and daughters have to hear it being read, they don't have a chiyuv kriya. Their chiyuv, their obligation is not to read the Megillah, but to hear it being read. Then not only can they not read it for men who have a chiyuv kriya, they can't read it for other women, because the whole nature of their obligation is to hear it being read, that it's part of the family. Who's responsible for the education of the family? Halachically, who has the chiyuv? The father. He reads it to make sure that every member of the family hears it. If the nature of their fulfillment of the mitzvah is to hear it being read, then by definition, not only can they not read it for men, they can't read it for women as well. That's point number one. They can't even fulfill the mitzvah according to that approach in the Rishonim. And that's borne out by the Gemara. Af hein hayu ba'oso aneis. What is af? I mean, they as well. There's not only men, but they also were included. Doesn't sound like, you know, like, and again, I don't mean it in a negative, but they have rabbinically, we're extending Megillah to them. What does that mean, we're extending it to them? So some Rishonim understand. They have to hear it being read. Not, the extension is not that they have the same chiyuv as a man. They have a chiyuv to read it. No, they have to hear it. It relates to them. It relates to them differently through Shmia. But even if you say, and there are Rishonim that say they have the same obligation, they have a chiyuv kriya. If they have a chiyuv kriya, yes, then they could read it for someone else who has a chiyuv kriya. If you assume, like the Rishonim that disagree with the Bahag, this discussion, by the way, is rooted in Megillah Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. However, Rav and Ravasi, the point we mentioned before, that for sure lichatchila, and we're lichatchila Jews, but the other opinion is that it's even ma'akev, even b'dieved, it has to be read b'tzibur by a minyan. It has to be read in front of a minyan of men, which by definition means a man has to read the Megillah. If a man has to read the Megillah to a minyan, it has to be heard by, you know, heard in front of a minyan, because it's pirsum meinisa. Pirsum meinisa means birabim. Why does it mean birabim? Because the mitzvah of being, the purpose of the pirsum is to be mekadesh Hashem, to sanctify God's name. How do you sanctify God's name? V'nikdashti b'soch b'nei Yisrael. That's how the kiyum of pirsum is fulfilled. Lichatchil according to one, b'dieved even according to the other, then what? Then by definition you can't have a woman reading the Megillah. There's much more, and next year, God willing, we'll have other themes in the Megillah, but we want to wish everyone a very, very meaningful Purim. Thank you.